Welcome back to another episode of The Leaders Table. I'm your host, Ricky Villanueva, here with my co-host, Chris Lipscomb.
Hey.
Chase Willoughby joins us on our podcast today. Chase is an alumnus of Chick-fil-A's Leadership Development Program and the current operator of Coral Ridge Mall in Coralville, Iowa. Chase, thank you for joining us today.
Awesome. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
For sure. It is our pleasure. Well, we're going to dive right in. And we'll just kind of start. Really, we'd love to hear your story, Chase, and kind of your background and what kind of got you started.
Yeah. I originally grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then went out to Colorado for college. I went to play football at Colorado School of Mines out there. And unfortunately, after my first year, had a bunch of injuries. I had a long string of injuries throughout high school and college. And my getting hurt my freshman year, I finally decided to go ahead and step away from football. And just finished out my freshman year there. Then as I transitioned into my sophomore year, knew that it was probably time to get a job since I wasn't gonna be on the football team anymore, and went into Chick-fil-A one day and just seemed like a kind, friendly environment and a good place to at least get a job while I was looking for some other things. I have an engineering degree, so that's kind of what I was looking for, but figured Chick-fil-A would do the trick for a little while. And I guess I just never stopped with it. So started as a team member at Chick-fil-A Denver West out in Colorado in Lakewood. And then after about 3.5 years there, I had, kind of worked my way up into a director role in that restaurant and then transitioned into LDP. During that time, I met my wife. She trained me on my very first day at Denver West and then traveled with me throughout LDP. We got married just right after I graduated, and about 9 months before we got into the program. Started traveling around in LDP together, and then we were on the road for pretty much exactly 30 months, so 2.5 years. Had 20 different assignments as we did that. Got a chance to see a lot of things. We drove through 35 states. We drove everywhere we went, drove through 35 states, got to live in 11, so just a really wide variety of experiences. We lived on both coasts, right near both, both the northern and southern borders. So just really opened our eyes to a bunch of different things. But got the opportunity as we were traveling around. I'm from Nebraska. My wife is from Iowa. We always knew that somewhere in the Colorado, Nebraska, Iowa area was where we wanted to get back to. And Coral Ridge Mall was a restaurant that was on our short list for a long time. Obviously, malls transition quite a bit. So we knew that there was a chance that Coral Ridge Mall might be coming open. And kind of always had our eye on it. It's a fairly high volume mall and a really unique opportunity here in the Coralville, Iowa City area. And when it came open, we jumped on it and applied, and by the grace of God, got the opportunity to be here. Since coming here, we've been in Coralville now for a little over 3 years. My son was born just right before we took over the restaurant. He was born about a week before, and we actually brought him home from the hospital about 12 hours before we took over the restaurant. So it was a fun day. Wow. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And then throughout the next couple of years, just growing our family, run the restaurant. We had a daughter about 8 months ago. So Kinley is 8 months old now, and loving life. So we got two kids, been married to Annie now for coming up on 7 years. That's kind of our story and how we've gotten here to Coralville.
Awesome.
Yeah, I got a question for Chase.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Chase, you mentioned you had somewhat of a sports background. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I was a football player growing up, played football, from the time I was in probably fifth grade all the way up through, my freshman year of college. Love sports, love the competitive atmosphere and just all it taught me. A lot of life lessons in terms of hard work. I was not a real naturally gifted athlete. I was a pretty pudgy kid growing up, but they could put me on the offensive line. It worked out okay. But as I got into high school, I knew that if I really wanted to be good and do something with sports, I was going to have to outwork everybody else. And that's kind of some of the foundation of where some of that work ethic and growth mindset, was started to be built was, my sophomore year of high school. I remember my mom would drop me off for our summer workout programs at 8 a.m. and she would just take an early lunch and she would come pick me up at 11:30. So I had 3.5 hours there and I was stuck there. I wasn't going to be able to do anything else. But I learned how to grind and how to find things to do and how to work hard. And I looked a lot different by the end of that summer than I did going into it. And you know, that, it laid some really great foundations and, you know, fighting through injuries. I had 5 reconstructive surgeries in 4 years from, you know, torn ACLs and a torn shoulder and all that. Just learning how to fight through some of those challenges and come back and, you know, have everything ahead of you, have your dreams, you know, feel like you're headed in that direction, kind of have it stripped away. I had to learn some of those things at a pretty early age, but it's a huge part of making me who I am today.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about the correlation between sports and business. What are some of the lessons you feel like you've learned in your time in sports that you've taken with you now as a business owner?
Yeah, I think like I said, just that idea of grit, like you get knocked down, you get back up again. You know, especially in football, right? It's play after play after play. And, you know, you miss this play, you get back in there and you go to the huddle and you show up for the next play and you try and win that one and you make adjustments. And just the idea that you don't give up, you keep moving forward and that the hard work pays off over time. You know, I mean, you're going to have a day or two where you're off and it doesn't look great, but consistently, if you're putting in the work day in and day out, you're showing up doing the right things day in and day out, things generally work out well. One of the things that my dad always used to tell me was that, hey, you could work as hard as you possibly, you know, want and as hard as you can, and there's no guarantee that it's going to lead to success. You know, you can't guarantee that hard work's going to lead to success. But if you don't work as hard as you can guarantee it won't lead to success. So just kind of bringing that mindset of like on the hard days, well, yeah, I don't have to do this, but if I don't, I can guarantee failure, or I can choose to show up and try for success.
Yeah. What's your favorite story about your time playing football? Do you have a favorite memory or story?
Oh, man. You know, I immediately go to – I had some cool ones. I got a chance to play in an all-star game down in Florida. Nice. That was really, really fun. You know, we had my senior year, we beat our crosstown rival that had beaten us for like the last 7 or 8 years. And they had multiple Division I recruits on the team. And we had gotten off to a strong start that season, but had beaten a lot of teams that didn't have great records. So, you know, in the newspapers and all that, there was a lot of talk about whether or not we were actually going to be good that year. And historically, we had been a very bad team. So showing up for that game, it was kind of the upstart team that's beaten a bunch of nobodies versus the team that, you know, had dropped a game or two already this year, but, you know, from a talent perspective looked really, really good on paper. It was a great game, really competitive, but one of the highlights of my time in high school, winning that game. That was a fun night.
So what was the transition like moving out of sports and then maybe having this focus on Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, it was really, really difficult. Really, really difficult. So, I mean, from a faith perspective, right? Like, sports had been my life growing up, and it had been too much of a part of my life. Like, it was very good, and there are many things I can take away from it that were really helpful. But it had taken a central part in my life, and was far more important to me than my faith, you know, at the end of the day. So then getting hurt, walking away from that, and really losing my identity. I had had an entire identity wrapped up in sports, and that was wrong, but it was real. And at 18 years old or 19 years old, I had everything that I identified with, everything that I had been dreaming of, stripped away from me. You know, when I had my last injury, and the doctors basically said, you know, it was a joint decision, but the doctors, when I told them I wasn't playing, one of them said, "I'm happy for you." I was like, "Oh wow, that's pretty significant." You know, I mean, I had everything stripped away from me, really went through a difficult time over those next couple of months, struggling with depression and just wondering who I was and where I was going to find myself, and ended up, again, by the grace of God, just going to a Christian group on campus, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and met some people there who changed my life. They gave me a Bible and said, "Hey, you should really start reading this. It's, you know, you'll be surprised by what it says." Started leaning into it, and just, man, as God has a way of doing, changed my life. And I grew so much of my faith over the coming next year. And then started Chick-fil-A. And like I said, when I started with Chick-fil-A, it was meant to be a very short-term thing. Kind of a humbling experience, you know, being a football player, you're kind of one of the, I don't know that I was ever the cool guy, but you have something to fall back on that's a little bit more exciting. Working in fast food is not that. And I knew a little bit about Chick-fil-A, not a bunch about Chick-fil-A at the time. So it wasn't that much different for me from, you know, applying at McDonald's or Burger King or anything like that. It was only maybe just a slight step up from that.
Yeah.
So a lot of humility there. I remember on my very first day, some friends came in as I was changing the trash cans and we're all excited. They're like, "Hey, it's the trash guy." And I'm like, "Will you please just leave?" But at the same time, changing those trash cans again is where I met my wife. So it all worked out.
For sure.
But yeah, it was a humbling experience, leaving sports, transferring into Chick-fil-A, and really that year in between, I grew so much in my faith. I mean, my life was changed in that year as I leaned into the Lord and really experienced a relationship with Him for the first time. I grew up in the church, but always kind of saw it more as rules to be followed rather than a life-giving relationship. And, you know, it was through those challenges with football that's what God used to kick off that process. And then, you know, there's challenges as the rest, as we go through life, right? There's challenges as we go through, you know, as I go through Chick-fil-A, Denver West, and then LDP and coming here to Coralville as an operator and in family. And it's just been a consistent theme in my life that God's always been there. My favorite verse is Romans 8:28. We know this, that He works all things for the good of those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. And it's just been something that He's been really faithful with in my life, and very blessed to be able to say that.
For sure. Well, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing, Chase. I think there's going to be a lot of people that listen to this and can relate to it. Thank you for sharing, because I think, like I said, it's very important for people to know, and especially if you're, I don't know, in that season where things are just super crazy, unclear. And being able to come out on the other end very clear-minded and understanding, like, hey, what is it that I'm built for, I think is important. So thank you for sharing. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about your time there at Denver West. And so you started with Chick-fil-A. You kind of thought it was short-term. Where did it really become like, man, I want to do this long-term. I want to be here. Not, you probably weren't sure exactly what you wanted to do, but you were like, hey, I want to explore what there is within this company.
I started, like I said, as just a part-time team member. We had a really great group back then. Like the more I look back on it, the more appreciative I am for the group that we had. It was just a really fun group of young people. We were all, you know, I mean, very typical for a restaurant, right? But I mean, all from like 18 to 22, really talented people. Many of us have gone on to either be in LDP, TDP, high-level leadership still at Denver West a decade later. There have been ones who've gone on to law school, stuff like that. It's just a really cool group. So got a chance to start there. After about 6 months, I think I started getting into entry-level leadership. I was a college kid leading high schoolers, so wasn't anything too big. I had no idea what I was doing, but it was in that season, kind of as I was going into that like entry level leadership and then starting to get into shift leadership role, where people had started there. Some of the leaders at Denver West had started pouring into my life and really talked about servant leadership and were demonstrating it. It just kind of one of those things that sparked curiosity. Coming from football, that's not really the world of leadership in sports. It's much more top down, command and control. It was really neat to see that. And as I was growing in my faith, just the spiritual backing that those leaders personally held in their life behind some of those principles was really, really neat to hear about. So it made me a lot more comfortable just kind of staying with Chick-fil-A through college. Like I had started off looking for a bunch of different things. By the time I was getting to that range, I was comfortable just, hey, like I'm working at Chick-fil-A. I'm proud of what I do. I'm happy here. Mm-hmm. I have fun. And, you know, when I graduate, I'll be an engineer. Mm-hmm. And then I was doing engineering internships over the summers. I did two engineering internships with the Department of Defense out in Maryland. And just kept, you know, I would go out there, I'd do the engineering, I'd come back, and was really open to both paths. And then it was, I think, my junior year of college that we actually went through an operator transition. My first operator, Ryan Smith, moved down to Dallas, and Frank Johnson moved into Denver West. And it really brought about all these questions around what does the operator do? You know, there's a lot of fear in the restaurant at that point. Oh, we're getting a new operator. What's going to happen? And I didn't really understand much of it. So I was like, I'm leading shifts. So it brought a lot of questions around about that. And Ryan was actually gracious enough to answer a lot of those while he was in that process. And just started to spark curiosity of like, oh, this is an opportunity that could be real. And it just, you know, I kind of tried to push it away. Coming from the engineering world, it was not a popular decision to choose Chick-fil-A. Most of the people in my life, didn't quite understand what I was pursuing. And it looked like I was turning away a really great career. Colorado School of Mines is one of the top engineering schools in the country. And it was a blessing to be able to go there. And it would be like going to Harvard to get a business degree and then go, you know.
Do something completely different.
Go work the counter at Chick-fil-A, you know? Yeah. So that's what it looked like. And that was a really difficult season. Again, going back to like adversity and facing adversity, you know, to have most of the people in your life telling you that you're going down the wrong path and to have the resolve to continue down that path was really, really tough. But it goes back to leaning into the Lord and then a couple of really key people who were supporting me in that. My wife, then at that time, my girlfriend, fiance, but now my wife, and then our director of operations, who is one of the biggest influences in my life, and our operator, Frank, at that time, all continue to help me down that path. So the questions started coming, and then I worked for one other. So my wife actually has a pre-med degree. She was going to pursue PA school, which would have kept us in one area for a really long time.
Yeah.
I would go back to Nebraska on breaks, and I would work at the Chick-fil-A there for Charlie Colon in Lincoln. And Charlie he's an awesome guy. Absolutely love Charlie. And he sat down with me at the end of one of those stints, and we were talking about, he was encouraging me, hey, I think you could do this operator thing. And I thought, yeah, you know, it might be interesting. And he goes, have you thought about the LDP path? And I said, hey, I've heard about it. I can't do it. And I said, my wife is going to be pursuing PA school. I can't ask her to give up her dreams just to, you know, to follow me around the country, all that. We don't want to travel separate, all those sort of things. And he goes, have you talked to her about it? And I said, no, but how could I even approach the conversation around, hey, you know, hey, Andy, do you want to give up your everything you've worked for the last 4 years so that I can pursue this Chick-fil-A thing? And he just sat back and he goes, you know, Chase, I don't think you can make that decision without at least having the conversation with her. And that conversation changed my life. We sat down, I went back, I was like, all right, that's fair. So I went and I just nervously asked Annie, I was like, hey, you can totally say no to this. I don't even know if we should do this or anything like that. But what do you think of this LDP thing? And she immediately was like, that sounds like an amazing opportunity. We should do that. You know? So that was kind of end of my junior year. And that's where everything kind of changed. Started saying, hey, this is where we want to pursue. And then came back. Frank was new coming into the restaurant. He had only worked with me for about a month before I left for my internship for the summer. And he, in probably a wise but cautious way, was like, well, we'll see how you feel when you get back from your internship. So he was pumping the brakes on the operator thing.
Yeah.
And I came back and I said, hey, Frank, I'm all in. I want to do this. And I think he was kind of shocked. we worked together, crafted a plan. It took about a year and a half of learning different things at the restaurant and, you know, just getting all the different opportunities. But really at that point, my senior year, I came back. I knew where I wanted to go. And we just started walking through that. And I was working a lot. And like I said, we just had such a great team at that time. And so many of those people are still with the restaurant. And just look back on it as a really blessed season to be a part of that.
Chase, were you certain that you wanted to be an owner operator before you went into LDP?
I would say I was pretty certain. In terms of like going into LDP, the goal was to be an operator at the end of it. Now, I don't know exactly. There are a lot of different factors that I think could have changed that. You know, being from the Midwest and Denver and knowing that's where we wanted to make home, Atlanta was never something that we really wanted to pursue. We never wanted to be in Atlanta. It was just, it wasn't going to be close to family and all that. So there, if I could have had an opportunity, I actually applied for an engineering internship with Chick-fil-A and got turned down. So if anyone in that department ends up seeing this, just know I made it. It ended up okay. but no, you know, maybe some of those things would have been, you know, interesting to me. But the nature of wanting to be back closer to family and living in, you know, in these kind of areas, those were never really serious considerations. And I don't, when we went into it, I don't think we ever had the intention of pursuing it without ending with Chick-fil-A, you know, like pursuing it to go to a different route. Obviously that route comes up for people and that's totally fine. And that's, you know, there are a lot of blessings the Lord can provide in that. But we went into it with the intention of definitely becoming an owner operator.
What was it about LDP that maybe solidified this goal and made you think, yeah, this was the right call?
Oh boy. I don't know. I don't know if LDP solidified it. They probably had more moments where I was like, am I crazy? No, it's, man, just the consistent theme from the time of being at Denver West to the time of LDP, all that, the opportunity to impact people, right? And just seeing that impact grow and grow and grow and get over time, like, you know, you do it with one person and it's nice and it's fun, but you do it for years in different environments and it stretches you and you see the fruit of that and see people becoming the best versions of themselves. It just becomes a theme of like, oh, like this is what I love doing. Like, I can't believe someone would pay me to do this for the rest of my life. And obviously, you know, the opportunities for our family are great, like financially, you know, work life balance or just opportunity to invest and flex that. Like, those are things that were always really, really important for us. You know, this opportunity has allowed Annie to be a stay at home mom, which she was pursuing the medical field, but being a stay at home mom was always her dream. And we certainly hope that someday when our kids are older, she gets a chance to be back in the medical field. But, you know, just those sort of things were really great. And then as far as going through LDP, I think there are probably days where I was like, man, if I can make it through this, I can probably make it through anything as an operator. just the excitement, man. It was such a, honestly, LDP was a great season for us. We had to do LDP. I wasn't going to make it through the restaurant. I probably was naive enough to think I was at that time, but I was 23 years old when I got in. I didn't have any experience. Like we needed to go through LDP. I needed to get my butt kicked a little bit there. just continuing to pursue it. It's been a really great journey. We're really thankful for our time in LDP. Like no one gets through without having some hardships and some difficult times. That's the nature of it. And nothing good in life comes without, you know, some challenge and some adversity. But overwhelmingly, man, LDP offered us the opportunity to travel the country, see everything, get a ton of experiences that were just outside of our comfort zone. You know, growing up in the Midwest, you're in this little bubble and to be leading restaurants in South Texas and urban LA and urban DC and suburban Detroit and, you know, being on the coast in Florida, totally different culture. So, man, just opened our eyes. We grew in our faith. Annie and I grew together with each other, which was really, really sweet. I don't know if that answers the question. I don't know that it confirmed like, hey, this is the right career. The career, for, you know, the opportunities the career provided, both from a stability financial standpoint, flexibility standpoint, and then just the impact on people. That was always something that appealed to me and that I love doing and still do.
For sure. Were there any like light bulb moments in LDP or maybe a certain assignment that you were just like, man, I'm so glad I had this opportunity because this was such a lifelong lesson. I mean, you probably have that in almost every assignment, but I know there's probably a few that you were like, man, this assignment helped me grow exponentially compared to maybe another assignment.
Yeah, I'd say two come to mind right away. So I was in Omaha, Nebraska, really, it was a 1 month transition, which are just really, really challenging. Leadership team was going to leave, and just had a really, we had some pretty significant challenges there. And I was a young leader who had always, I'd been a leader on every place, you know, like every team I'd ever been on, but I had never been the singular top leader before. So it was my first IM assignment, being all by myself. And I tried to lead 55 people, and not shockingly, it went horribly. You know, I'm answering every question. I'm there at 5 a.m. I'm there till, you know, 11 o'clock at night. There's other factors that played into that, just the restaurant situation, all that. But I was getting my butt kicked over and over and over again, running myself into the ground, and like it was a really, really challenging season. And had a moment in the back office where it was just like, wow, what am I doing with my life? I mean, honestly, we go back to like the previous question, right? Like it was less confirming of this is what I want to do, and more of like, oh my gosh, is this really what I want to do?
Yeah.
And just had some moments there where I realized like something's got to change. Like I don't know what needs to change, but something's got
to
change.
There's something that needs to change.
Yeah. And I made the decision at that point just to start, like, I've got to start developing someone. Like, I got to start developing some other leader to handle something other than what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And just started with our back house director. He was an 18-year-old team member the day that I got there. And 2 weeks later, he's the back house director. But he was just a really solid kid, really, really good guy, had all the character things you'd want. Just started, I would do safes and ERQ A's with him. I'm like, hey man, we're going to do a safe and ERQ A every single day, and I'm just going to pour in knowledge to you. And I have just some really cool stories at the end of how he flourished in that. And he's now actually pursuing LDP and just super nice. Proud of him.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was a great ending, but man, just the massiveness of trying to lead a whole team. And then actually like I always had heard like lead through leaders and, you know, you can't lead everyone and all that. But I didn't know what it looked like. Like I had always heard it and I would agree with it, but that's where I actually learned what it looked like. And then the other big assignment was I was in Hutchinson, Kansas, when COVID hit. I had a bunch of, so 20 assignments in 30 months. I had a lot of really quick assignments. Mm-hmm. I only had one that lasted longer than I think 6 weeks, and that was Hutchinson.
Oh, wow.
They were going to transition me after, I believe, 8 weeks there. And I reached out to my consultant and said, hey, I really need some more time in this assignment. I need something to get some real results. Like, please let me stay. And they're like, yes, you can stay. And I'm like, awesome. This is going to be great. And I believe I got that news on like February 25th of, you know, 2020. And 2 weeks later, the entire world changed and nothing. There was no results to be had. But leading the business in that time, feeling the weight of people's lives in my hands, like they would come to, you know, they were coming to me saying, hey, my wife just got laid off. Like, am I going to get enough hours? And because we can't afford our rent. And I had never felt that weight before. Like I always cared about my job. I always wanted to do a really great job. I cared about the people, but if I felt a different weight that like my direct decisions had, my decisions had really direct impact on others. And it forced me to have clear conversations like, hey, I'll figure out a way to get you some hours, but like, you're going to have to provide, like, you're going to have to help us in there. Cause we don't really have the sales to cover that right now. Mm-hmm. You know, just, it forced me to have clear conversations. It forced me to think more about the weight of what I'm actually doing.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I'm going back to like a place where it really confirmed that this was the right move, like that probably would be one of them, of just mm-hmm. like, oh, this is hard, but I can have real impact here. And it was really great.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. What was your favorite moment of LDP?
Oh boy. Your
favorite stories.
Favorite stories, man alive. I'm trying to think. I got to work with Jimmy Jernigan, who's one of the longest tenured operators in the chain down in Dallas. Hearing Jimmy tell stories of Truett when it was truly like, I mean, handshake deals was just incredible. Like it's the things you hear about, but like you don't, it's just so different when it's like, oh my gosh, like this is living in front of me right now. That was really crazy. Going through that COVID season, we were really, really blessed to there's a really unique element to the fact that they tried to keep GOSs at that time really regionalized and not expand things unnecessarily. So I got to work with the same people over and over again. You know, I think of people like, you know, Travis Kuhn, Jose Hernandez, Tyler Reese, and I were on assignments for 6 months together consecutively. Just the really special nature of building some bonds there that I don't think are typical in the program was really, really fun. The same trainers were with us on all those assignments, and many of them are now in the program, and that was really cool to see. So those were some really great stories. Mm-hmm. Man, I look back on funny ones. There was poor Brent Dawson down in Bryan, Texas, man. I about shut down his restaurant. It was my first backhouse GOS assignment. I was horrible at ordering truck. I got into the program. I knew nothing. Like, I was horrendously ill-equipped as a backhouse shift leader when I got in the program. I was terrible. I snuck in on them. And I've told LDP leadership that they should have never let me in. I don't know why they did. We got to update the selection process. You got to know that I can bread chicken, because I couldn't when I started. But man, Brent Dawson, it was my first backhouse GOS assignment. Man, I almost shut down the restaurant for a week straight because I was so awful at ordering truck. And you would think that at some point, like, I would get it, but I didn't. And it was just horrendous. There was one day, my favorite story from that, I was calling around. I would show up at 5 a.m. every morning to see what I needed to borrow because I missed it on truck. And which is just bad that you need a system for that. But I saw, and my guy said, "Hey, we're going to need a lot of peanut oil." And I said, "How much?" He goes, 6 cases. And I'm like, "Oh no." So I start calling around, and I called a restaurant, and I said, "Hey, listen, I totally understand if you can't do this. Can I borrow 6 cases of peanut oil? Like, do you have any?" And they, you know, let me check and all that. And she comes back, she's like, "Yeah, we can do that. That's fine." I literally was like, "Really? Like, 6 extra cases of peanut oil?" Mm-hmm. She goes, "Yeah, well, we knew you guys were having some trouble. So we've been stocking up on our end to help you out." And I realized that we had a restaurant running a small DC down the street because I was so bad ordering trucks. So there's a happy ending to it. Next is, I learn, you know, you take there's not really a happy ending for Brent. Brent, you know, was very gracious to me, but probably really thankful when I left. But you know, you take the lessons you learn in the next assignment. I did really, really well in that role. But yeah, that was a funny one. I mean, I was pretty bad. I feel like I was a decent leader of people. I was pretty bad at running a restaurant.
So Ricky and I have the opportunity to spend, I mean, we spent time, we all three of us spent time in LDP, and we've all been able to talk to trainers or restaurant leaders that want to get into the program. And, you know, I guess the more I talk to these leaders, the more I see some disconnect between what LDP is and what they think LDP is. So do you have any thoughts on that topic of, if someone's getting ready to apply for LDP, what would you want them to know about the program?
Yeah. Well, as I talk with people who are looking to get an LDP, mm-hmm. number one, like I said, my background is I was actually really, I mean, I joke, but I was really bad at running a restaurant. Like, the night before my interview, I was sitting there looking at pathway procedures on how to make biscuits in case they asked me in the interview. So I think you got to have a really strong base, both front and back house, mm-hmm. on knowledge. Like, you've got to be there. And that's the foundation. And then I would say, like, for me, be ready for the hard. Like, it comes down to a growth mindset. Embrace the hard. Oftentimes, while I was in LDP, there's always this tension of, like, how do we care for participants better, and how do we get the work done? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I always felt, I was on most of my assignments alone. My GOS assignments, not so much. I was on most of my assignments for, like, on the IM side alone. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was challenging. Yes, there were days that I really wished I had someone else there. But I mean, literally the two assignments that I just talked about that were some of the most memorable in Omaha and in Hutchinson, two of the biggest growth assignments for me. Like, I was working 80 hours a week. I was, you know, I had to figure it out myself. I didn't have someone else to ask. I didn't have someone else to blame it on.
Yeah.
Like, and there's certainly a place for asking for guidance and wisdom. That's not wrong, but there's also a place for challenging yourself to have to figure it out at the end of the day. And as an operator, that's essential. Like you really don't have anyone else that can carry the weight that you carry as an operator. That's one of the biggest differences between LDP and operator is just this unseen weight. And I would say that like one of the mentalities Andy and I always try to have is we're going to embrace the hard. We're going to be ready to go through that. And there has to be communication and there's different life scenarios. If I had kids, that would have been way, way harder at that time. Mm-hmm. But just being prepared for that. Not shying away from it. Like the hard assignments are the reason that I got to operator. And I think it is wonderful what the program is doing to care for participants. I am not going to sit here and be the crotchety old man that's, oh, back in my day, we didn't have this. I do just think that there's a healthy balance of like, if we go too far towards providing too much support, it may diminish the growth opportunities that actually get people where they want to go. And I'm really thankful for those hard moments that, you know, that did get me where I wanted to go.
Chase, I got a leadership question for you.
Yeah.
What leadership principle are you so passionate about that it gets you frustrated when you see others miss it?
Ooh. All right. I think this is the first time this thing's ever gone public. I'm going to go with actually one of my own leadership principles. that I love. I call it own your 10%. And the whole mentality of it is, no argument is ever one side's 100% right and the other side's zero. You know, like it every single time, if we're having a disagreement, there's probably some element that both of us on either side have done some sort of wrong or have some, you know, have hurt the other one in some way. And I call it own your 10%. So often, like, because I'm more right than the other person, and that's subjective, obviously, but like, you know, a lot of cases, you know, maybe the whole world says, yeah, listen, like, you're more right than the other person. Like, you know, you may have done this one thing, but like, look at all the stuff they did, right? Because of that, so often we use that to stalemate and to not, you know, bring reconciliation, those sort of things. Call it own your 10%. Like, show up, and before the other person owns their piece, own what you did wrong. Own where you could have been better and what you could have done better. And even if that's only 10% of the conversation or 10% of the problem, it opens up the place for healing for the 90%. Now, the other person's still got to own up to their side. Doesn't mean that that we have to make our 10% look like 50%. But we got to own up to where we could grow and where we could have been better. And that is the thing that creates that space for reconciliation and healing and growth. And we have to do it first. Leaders go first.
Yeah.
Like, leaders have to take the ownership of apologizing first, of stepping into hard conversations first. That's the role of the leader. So that would be my thing.
So where did this idea of owning your 10% in conversations, where did this idea come from?
Yeah. So a variety of different places and different experiences growing up. But the first place I would use it in business was I was a shift leader. I was a shift leader going to the director level at Denver West. Mm-hmm. In a very good hearted way, one of the directors encouraged me, hey, you gotta lead like you're already in the role. Like, you gotta act like you're already in the role. And they were encouraging me to basically tell other shift leads what to do and lead them as if I were their boss, when I was not yet their boss. And if you're familiar with five levels of leadership with John Maxwell, authority is number one. You don't want to lead from authority. You want to be in a relational place. And that is, I think, the heart of what he was saying. I think there are things that my leader could have communicated better. And I think there are things that young leader Chase just didn't understand. I was trying to lead people at the same level like I was their boss. Mm-hmm. And they were doing legitimate things wrong, like taking personal phone calls in the back office and, you know, just not like doing boneheaded things on setting up the shift. I'm like, why would we ever do that? Like, however, like they were like, the things they were doing were pretty objectively like, oh, someone needs to address that. at the same time, the way that I addressed it wasn't the appropriate way to go about it. So all of this comes to a head in three of our shift leads went to the director of operations and asked that I be fired. And they were like, well, that's odd because we were thinking you're going to promote it. But people told me, he's like, Chase, what the heck is going on here? Like, what are you doing? And I explained the situation. He's like, listen, man, like, we love you. You're going to be here. Like, we're not mad about that. But if you want to move to the director level, like, you're going to have to lead these people and you're going to have to figure out how you're going to build relationships with them, because you're not going to get anywhere if you have their buy-in. So we started thinking about it. And, you know, I was challenged to think about it. And I just sat each one of them down and had a personal conversation with each one of them and just said, hey, listen, I know that our relationship hasn't been great. And I know that I have led in a way that facilitated that led us to not being in a great spot from a relational standpoint. And I'm sorry, you know, I hope you'll forgive me. I want to be better moving forward. I want to, you know, I want to be able to work together and value your opinions. I didn't ask for an apology on their end and just said, hey, I'm sorry. And for all three of them, it opened up, you know, on then they said like, yeah, well, to be honest, I probably deserved it, or I probably should have had that. It opened up, and man, when I go back to Denver West, those are some of the biggest hugs I get now. You know, when I walk through the door, a couple of them are still there or have been there over the years. And those are some of the biggest hugs I get. And it's just so rewarding to see. I mean, we're talking like we're all 18 to 21, you know, at that time, right? Like none of us know anything. So we are all growing. We're all learning. The grace that was there, the way that we were able to build relationships, and then to see us all a decade later and to see like really good people who have grown and all that. Like, it's just so cool to see the way that plays out. You know? And sometimes, you know, we get to see little pieces of that after a conversation, someone grows, but man, you watch over a decade and just see like the real impact you get to have on people and then how those relationships have grown over time. Like, really, really cool. So.
Awesome. Rick, I'll let you jump in. I felt like I've been.
Oh, no. You are totally doing a great job, man. Appreciate you. I had a few questions. I'm going to kind of go back a little if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Talked about growing up in the Midwest. I think you're the first guest we've had on that's from the Midwest. I think most of our guests are like all basically, if you look at it, it's like the horseshoe. It's all like the south to the coasts.
Yeah, that's the way the entire U.S. works. It's not just it's not just your guess.
But growing up in the Midwest, you went back to plant your roots, right? You kind of had your roots planted, kind of, I guess you could say Denver's still part of that Midwest there, traveled the country for so long, and then you said, man, I want to go back to the Midwest. I'd love to just hear, it's like, what makes the Midwest so unique that you want to own a business there? I know you're from there, but I'd love to, you know, anyone else that's maybe thinking of like, and the Midwest, I don't really know too much about what makes the Midwest such an enticing area for you to be in.
Yeah, it's, well, if I'm going to be totally honest, it's not real enticing from the outside, but we love it. We absolutely, we really do. So obviously family's a huge piece of that, but from a cultural standpoint, so like my mom grew up on a farm and I spent a lot of time on my grandparents' farm growing up. And there's just a culture of hard work in the Midwest, blue collar nature. Like we get an opportunity to serve a community that's rolling up their sleeves and just working every single day. Yep. And then like there's kind of this culture of like hard work and family that is just really, really cool. It's a place where not to get too like sentimental or sappy about it, but like family like values and priorities seem to be in the right order in the Midwest. And that's obviously a personal opinion. Other people might feel differently. But it's just a place where people seem to kind of prioritize the right things. The pace is a little bit slower, but you know, we wish coming from Denver where, you know, we would go on hikes on a regular basis and the natural beauty of Denver is just incredible. We certainly wish there was more of that here in the Midwest, but there's still like you can find beauty in any place. Like you can find the great things in any place, and there's gonna be great people in any place you go. But yeah, that we have really enjoyed the pace of life of the Midwest. And then from a Chick-fil-A standpoint or just a business standpoint, it's fun to pioneer a new place. You know, it's fun to be in a community where, that doesn't know Chick-fil-A as much, and to get a chance to be a part of bringing that to them, and growing the brand here in the Midwest. So that's more of a, just a personal fun challenge for me of like, hey, I'm passionate about this. You know, I've seen what it can look like, and it's exciting to think of like, okay, how do we build that? How do we build that culture here?
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. I think for me, you know, when I think the Midwest, I think of just like cornfields everywhere. That's just like kind of what I think what most people think. And I think from the time that you and I have spent over the last few months, just kind of talking through some things, it's like there is a very unique sense of purpose for a lot of people that, from the Midwest. And I think it's kind of one of those things for me where it's like, hey, I should go out. I haven't really been to the Midwest, to be honest. I guess the closest you would say is like, I don't know. Someone may say this is not the Midwest at all, but I was like, Ohio. I don't know if that's really the Midwest, but Ohio is probably like the closest thing I've really gone to the Midwest, and definitely want to explore some more. And part of that is just thank you to you, to kind of dispel some of those. I don't know if it's like a bad notion, I guess is probably the best way to put it, where it's like, hey, what is there to do in the Midwest? But with that said, is I love that you said you're like, you're pioneering a lot of different things for the brand. You're able to bring Chick-fil-A to a lot of different people who may not have been exposed to it. And I'd love to just hear is like, with all of these really cool things that you are passionate about right now, and you're going to continue to be passionate about, how do those influence your leadership style? And how has that really shaped kind of your journey, maybe as a leader growing up, and then also like currently now as an operator?
A lot of those translating to sports and working on a farm growing up, like a lot of those things, like you just learn this element of hard work and of purpose. Like you work till the job is done and the work you do matters, right? Like people are being fed off the work that you do. Animals are being fed and taken care of off the work you do. You know, when you get into the sports world, which is a really big sports culture in the Midwest, because there isn't a whole lot else to do. So we do sports. But, you know, when you're on a team, like you have other people that are accountable and like you work to get the job done together. I think those are things that shaped me growing up, that I'm really passionate about. And then just like the work that you do, in many ways is a reflection on like, or like the product of what you're bringing is a reflection of the work you put in.
Yeah.
That's not all, like there are always variables that can throw that off. And we always have to find our identity first and foremost in Christ and, understand that. But the natural outpouring of the work that I'm doing should be a really great product. And with Chick-fil-A, like, awesome. That should mean a really great sandwich. It should mean really great hospitality. The idea of excellence has been central to my leadership, and it's something I'm really, really passionate about. Just the idea of like, hey, are we doing a great job? And we interact with someone every single day that has never had Chick-fil-A before. Like we are someone's first Chick-fil-A experience every day here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Are we living up to that standard? Like if they get a random sandwich in our restaurant, would that be a great experience? When I think back to my first experience at Chick-fil-A, and how great it was, am I providing that for the person who's having their first experience today? So I think there's a weight to that. And then just the idea, going back to the idea of care, right? Like, hey, how are we in the Midwest, very communal based, like how are we caring for each other? And, you know, in the restaurant, like how are we building a culture of care where our team feels like they're supported, you know, they feel like they have opportunities. And I think the excellence plays off of that as well. The more excellent we are, the more caring we get to be. The more caring we are, the more that, you know, the team is excited to drive excellence. And it just keeps going around.
Perfect.
Chase, I have the honor of asking you the last question for today. In honor of Founders Week at Chick-fil-A, you know, we're honoring Truett Cathy, our founder. What is your favorite Truett Cathy story?
Oh boy. Man, I really like There's a lot of them that I could go to, and I'm sure I'll come up with other ones that I'm like, oh man, I should have said this. I really like the Coke story. Like Truett just selling Cokes as a little kid. Like, I love the idea of this little, like, you know, little kid figuring out to buy Cokes for a nickel and then sell them for buy Cokes for a quarter and sell them for a nickel, and he's making 5 cents off of it. And he did have to put ice in there, so I don't know if he factored that into like his food cost or whatnot. But like, just this idea of like this, like, you know, young boy, like, figuring that out. And I think back to when I was a kid, having like similar ideas. I never actually like did any of them because they weren't nearly as practical. yeah, I eventually started like a little lawn mowing business that worked out, but like, I just think it's really cool to think of like his entrepreneurial spirit showing up at that young of an age. And then going back to the idea of excellence that he like realized like, oh, hey, I need to put ice on this. And mm-hmm. all that. Like, I just think it's really, really cool to see some of those principles showing up so foundationally in who Truett was. And then the care, you know, that he's known for, that ran throughout his whole life. I think just really, really cool pieces to remember him and to really celebrate in him.
It's awesome. It's awesome. All right, Ricky, take it away.
Well, first off, big thank you to Chase for joining us on our podcast today. We are excited that we had you on, and thank you so much for just providing so much insight. So thank you for that, Chase.
Second, thank you. It was great being here.
For sure, for sure. And secondly, it's like great to have Chris back in the saddle with me here. It's been a little while. I think this is been probably two or three episodes that I haven't had Chris. So I'd let you take it away today. I enjoyed having you on and thinking through all those different questions. So thank you for that. And just for everyone else that's going to be listening and watching, just thank you for joining us today. We hope this episode provides inspiration, encouragement, and community. So please follow, share, like the podcast, The Leaders Table, hosted by Chris Lipscomb and Ricky Villanueva, on LinkedIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, and RSS.com. And with that, thank you so much, guys.